Good morning, everybody. My name is Heath, and in case you didn't notice, today is Compassion Sunday. It's either going to go one or two ways. Either I have gotten all my tears out, or they just got started. And did you notice that two of the most nasally people, or allergy-prone people, are speaking in your church every other Sunday? So we apologize for that, or maybe we ain't no apologies. I don't know. But forgive us for the sound we have. It's not our sound; it's Jesus' sound. So we're trying to speak His word. Okay, today's Compassion Sunday, not across America, but right now, right here. And for those of you that are new to the church, you picked a doozy. We are going to I'm going to read to you about Mark 8. Read through Mark 8, most of it. And when I read Mark 8. I could not help but think this is the perfect time to present Compassion International to all of you. And so their theme verse for this year is 1 John 3:16 and 18. I'm going to read it to you now. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down His life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. So Compassion International was started by a man named Everett Swanson, and he was a pastor from Chicago. And during the Korean War, he felt the pull of God to go over to South Korea and to minister to our troops. And so he does. And while he's there, he goes into the city, and it's a cold day, and he goes into a restaurant. And when he leaves the restaurant, he's holding his jacket in his arms. And you may have heard me tell this story before, so for those that have, just bear with me. As he leaves the restaurant, his jacket is snatched from him by a small boy. Now, he's from Chicago, so he's not unaccustomed to this type of crime. He knows exactly what to do. He chases the boy. And he runs around the corner and through the alleyways, and he loses the boy. But he sees his jacket on the ground in a doorway. So he just thinks the boy has thrown it down and run off. So he goes and he picks up the jacket. And underneath it, he sees a smaller, frail child shivering in the cold. And as his eyes adjusts to the dark room, he sees that the floor is littered with children, cold and shivering, and they're giving each other the only thing they have to give, which is each other's warmth. So, moved, he goes back to the restaurant, and he purchases soup, and he gets blankets, and he goes, and he covers the children, and he feeds them soup. And as the sun goes down, he has to go home. So he leaves, he goes back to the base. And all night long, he can't sleep. He's thinking about the children. So he goes back the next morning. And he gets up early. And he sees the soldiers, the South Korean soldiers, cleaning the streets. And he notices that they're cleaning them from the bodies of the people that didn't make it through the night. And so then, sometime later, he goes home. And on the ride home, he hears the engines of the plane making this repetitive sound over and over again. And in his mind, he thinks that it's talking to him. And he's hearing the words, "What are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do?" So he goes back home, and he goes to his friend, and he tells him all that he saw and all that he did. And his friend, who's also a pastor, says, "I've been waiting on someone like you to bring me this." And he pulls out a check. And in 1952, it was a check for $1,000. And it was blank. And he goes, "This check's for you. Go do what you need to." And so he did. He went back to South Korea, and he created orphanages. Thousands by the time he was done. And he created Compassion International. And so for over 70 years, Compassion has rescued 2.2 million children in 29 different countries from poverty in the name of Jesus. And so what Compassion International does is it takes one sponsor and one child, and it pairs them together to form a relationship. And it costs $43 a month. And with that money, Compassion International provides a Christ-centered, child-focused, church-driven ministry. So they meet the practical needs of the child, and they present them with the gospel. It's child-focused. It's one sponsor and one child. And then it's church-focused, church-driven. It is, they link them with churches in their community so they can continue to be fed and ministered to. So when you choose to sponsor a child through Compassion, you pay the money, and then you get a letter from that child thanking you for seeing them where they are and not leaving them alone. And then you form a relationship. They write you back, and you write them. And not overnight, but over time, a relationship grows with that child. With that, I'm going to read Mark 8. 1 through 10. During those days, another large crowd gathered. Since they had nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said, "I have compassion for these people. They have already been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will collapse on the way, because some of them have come a long distance." His disciples answered, "But where in this remote place can we get enough bread to feed them?" "How many loaves do you have?" Jesus asked. "Seven," they replied. He told the crowd to sit down on the ground. When he had taken the 7 loaves and given thanks, he broke them and gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people, and they did so. They had a few small fish as well. He gave thanks for them also and told the disciples to distribute them. The people ate and were satisfied. Afterward, the disciples picked up 7 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. About 4,000 were present. After he had sent them away, he got into the boat with his disciples and went to the region of Dalmanutha. So Jesus had compassion for these people. And compassion is not just a feeling like you have sorrow or sympathy. It's a feeling attached to an action. The definition, the word used in the Greek for compassion is called splagitsomai. And it means to have the bowels yearn. It's a gut feeling that doesn't allow you to stay the way you are. It's a feeling that takes action. But let's not forget, Jesus is the second member of the Trinity. If he had wanted to, he could have rained down manna from heaven, like he did for the Israelites in the desert. But instead, he turned to the disciples, and he asked them, "How many loaves do you have?" Knowing that it wasn't enough to feed the 4,000. Here's some poverty facts for you from Compassion. At least 691 million people worldwide are hungry. Over 11% of the global population is severely food insecure. Globally, 1 in 27 children will die before age 5 from malnutrition and other preventable causes related to poverty. Approximately 250 million children and youths around the world are not attending school. There's more facts, and they're on a sheet out there on the table for you to read if you want. So, my family, we're all in on this compassion. We have been sponsoring children since before Natalie Ann was born. In fact, I've shared with you in the past that I was terrified of becoming a father. And in that hurt, in that time, Emily said, "Well, if I'm not going to be a mother, at least I'll be a mother to somebody." And so on Mother's Day, either 2008 or 2009, she picked up a packet and we started sponsoring. His name was Francisco. We currently sponsor 3 children, not to brag, just to tell you where we're at. And today we're sponsoring number 4 because we have 4 children. And his name is Diego, and he was born February 12th. That's Emily's birthday, the same year as Eli. So he's just like Eli. And the only difference between this boy and my son Eli is where they were born. He has been waiting to be sponsored for 196 days. So Diego's mine. And you may ask yourself, how am I going to solve this problem? I mean, these are some staggering numbers. Those millions, that's almost twice the population of the U.S. How are we going to solve that? I don't know. I have no idea how God takes the little bit of money from each sponsor and completely changes the life like you saw in the video. But he does. I'm going to read to you Matthew 9, 36 and 38. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. When he said, then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Some pretty strong words, harassed and helpless. My mind goes to the image that we saw of the children that Kiwi grew up with, harassed and helpless. But I think Jesus is asking us to pray. He says, ask the Lord of the harvest to do these things. So some people pray, some people pay, some people play. I'm asking you to do one or all 3. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. That was the theme of the orphanage that I got to visit in Mexico. Before Henry Luke was born, I took an opportunity to go down to the Baja Peninsula in Mexico. And it was a medical mission trip, and we helped people who could not see. I gave medical care, and Dr. Lance Haluka, who he passed recently, and Dr. Eames, they treated eye diseases. And it was an orphanage, and there was hundreds of kids there. And so we used it, and then people from the community would come and get care. And everywhere, from the stained glass in the chapel to hand-stitched places on pillows throughout the entire orphanage, that theme was the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. And so we flew there on a Saturday, I think. And Saturday night, we had a church service. And Sunday morning, we had a longer church service. And church service in Mexico, we all sat, all the English speakers sat together, and all the kids sat together. And somebody spoke Spanish, and then somebody interpreted in English. So it was like watching a tennis match, back and forth. And at the end of service, after the singing and the message and all, this lady got up and started talking. And some of you heard this story before. Bear with me. She started to speak, and nobody got up during the whole service. But when she started speaking, these 2 kids, brother and sister, they stood up, and they walked up front. And I was like, okay, somebody's going to accept Jesus as their Lord today. That's a good thing. And the woman's crying, and it's Spanish, so I can't understand it. And then this man on the back row, he stands up. And I was like, well, more people are going to get saved today. Then we all look to our English speaker, and she's crying. And then finally, through her tears, she tells us that this dad has come back for his son, for his children. They've been at the orphanage for 2 years, and somehow, some way, he was able to come back and rescue them and take them home. And it was a good thing. And so that's where I got the nickname Puddles, because I cried the entire trip, okay? And they made fun of me, and I just couldn't help it. But when she said that in English, that what was happening, this feeling in my stomach, I didn't want to throw up, but it was like my stomach just turned, everything just turned upside down. And I think that's what compassion feels like. This yearning of your bowels that you just can't not do something. So I'm going to read Mark 8, 11 through 21. The Pharisees came and began to question Jesus, to test him. They asked him for a sign from heaven. He sighed deeply and said, "Why does this generation ask for a sign? Truly, I tell you, no sign will be given to it." Then he left them, got back in the boat, and crossed to the other side. You know, it takes you a few times of reading through this stuff to get all the things that the Holy Spirit wants you to know. But if they had just shown up a little bit earlier and seen 4,000 people in the middle of nowhere eating, that would have been the sign. They would have had it. But they were like on the wrong side of the lake, and it was just poor timing. And anyways, they just wanted to see him do a miracle. So he said no to them. All right, verse 14. The disciples had forgotten to bring bread, except for one loaf they had with them in the boat. "Be careful," Jesus warned them. "Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod." They discussed this with one another and said, "Is it because we have no bread?" Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see, and ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember when I broke the five loaves for the 5,000? How many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" 12, they replied. "And when I broke the seven loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" They answered, 7. He said to them, "Do you still not understand?" So what does the yeast mean? Marianne knows. She led on Sunday night how to make bread. And a lot of you attended that. And so yeast is fermented dough. It's a little bit of fermented dough added to the loaf that spreads into the whole loaf and causes it to rise. It's the small thing that invades everything. So why is Jesus telling his disciples to watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod? Well, the yeast could refer to the common thing that the Pharisees and Herod had, which was a desire to hold on to the control and the power they had. See, the Pharisees had religious control. Herod, he had political control. And neither one of them wanted to give it up, but both of them feared that because of Jesus, it was going to be taken from them. Also, neither of those groups believed that Jesus was the Son of God. Then Jesus asked his disciples, "Are your hearts hardened?" So, do you have a hard heart? What's the one thing that you're holding on to that you put above everything else? What's the thing that infects your life like the yeast invades the dough? Is it sin, or shame, or fear, or doubt? If it is, you could make a really good disciple. Because they didn't even see it. They didn't know. And Jesus warns them about it. They worried about what they had and what they didn't have instead of focusing on the one they had right in front of them. All right, Mark 8, 22 and 26, through 26. They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside of the village. When he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands
on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home saying, don't even go into the village. So Jesus took this blind man and he led him out of the village, possibly to a place he had never been before, which took trust. And the miracle wasn't immediate. It took time. Because some of the things that Jesus teaches us doesn't happen overnight, but over time. And so far, have you noticed that in Mark 8, Jesus has fed people, he's given them spiritual guidance, and he's treated their illnesses. It's a lot like what compassion does for these children. That's why I couldn't not make today Compassion Sunday. All right, Mark 8, 27 through 29. So Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, who do people say I am? They replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others one of the prophets. But what about you, he asked, who do you say I am? Peter answered, you are the Messiah. Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. Who do you say I am? This is the most important question that you'll ever ask yourself. Who do you say Jesus is? Do you know that Jesus is the Son of God, the second member of the Trinity, the one who left heaven and came down on a rescue mission to seek and to save that which was lost? He came for you, and he paid a high price because you're worth it. You were worth it to him. So do you know him as Lord of your life? Not my will, but your will. Not what I want, but what you want, Lord. That's what the Lord of your life means. C.S. Lewis, he's an author, lived a long time ago, wrote Chronicles of Narnia, Out of the Silent Planet. I read that in high school. He also wrote a book called Mere Christianity. This is a quote from him, from Mere Christianity. I am trying here to prevent anyone saying the really foolish thing that people often say about him. I'm ready to accept Jesus as a great moral teacher, but I don't accept him, his claim to be God. That is the one thing we must not say. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on the level with a man who says he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. And so once you make Jesus Lord of your life, the natural and normal response is to act like he did. See, he left heaven on a rescue mission to seek and to save that which was lost. He left heaven and he traveled to a foreign land because it was a group of people that he wanted to save. The work that Compassion International is doing to rescue children in poverty in the name of Jesus, to meet their needs, to give them hope and a future, it just smells like Jesus. When Jesus describes the 4,000, he said, they have already been with me 3 days. Some of these children have waited over a year to be sponsored. It was a miracle that Jesus took so little food and was able to feed and satisfy so many people. And we have no idea the impact that we could have on others. These children, through your sponsorship, not only will be fed and cared for medically, but also emotionally and spiritually. They will be given a safe place to play. They will be told that they are loved and that they are worth fighting for. And also be told that someone not quite like them from a land far away loved them enough that they would pay a price for them. So this will have an impact on their own families, on their brothers and their sisters. There's no telling how far or how many generations it could impact. And I realize that presenting this today with these packets and the video, it's very emotionally charged. It's heavy. I get it. And I've been to concerts, music concerts. Some of them I even paid for, where they'll stop the concert in the middle and present something a lot like this. And people walk up and down the aisles holding packets. And honestly, I just want them to stop and like turn the music back on. Like, I came for a concert. So I get it. It's awkward. There's a pastor that I follow in Jacksonville. His name's Joby Martin. It's a church of 1122. Emily and I used to go there when we lived in Jacksonville. And he often tells a story where the first time he held Compassion, and they have a huge church, lots of people. See, we only got 10 packets today because when I told them I wanted to hold a Compassion Sunday, they said, well, how many people are going to be there? And I was like, about 40. They said, okay, we'll send you 10 packets, not 40. Because however many kids don't get sponsored, they're not going to get sponsored anywhere else in the world. Because this packet, it's Diego, it's just like me holding his hand. Because there's only one Diego. There's only one packet for him. So if you take a packet today and either forget about it or say, I'm going to wait, I'm going to hold on to it, nobody else is going to sponsor that child maybe up to a year until they figure out that it's not happening and then they create a new packet for him. But anyways, I don't know how they did it. They ordered a packet for everybody in the church, like 1,000 packets. And when they came through the doors, they put a packet in everyone's hand. And then he preached his face off for an hour. At the exits, they put big industrial trash cans. And at the end of the service, he said, I want you to sponsor a child. But if you don't want to, just throw them in the trash. Because that's where they're going to eat tonight. Now, I'm not doing that to you. But I bet a lot of kids got sponsored, okay? Instead, I'm going to do something like, I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to read to you what Jesus said. Listen to these words again. Listen to the imagery and how it compares. This is Mark 8, 1 through 3. During those days, another large crowd gathered. Since they had nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I have compassion for these people. They have already been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will collapse on the way because some of them have come a long distance. So, if God is telling you to sponsor a child today, then come do it. There's 3 down front. There's about 5 in the back. Maybe 6. And if God's not telling you to do it, don't. And if you're already sponsoring kids, either through Compassion or somewhere else, that's great. You're doing it. Because I know this isn't free. But if you can sponsor a child today, or if you can't sponsor a child today, I want you to come pray. Because they need your prayers. Pray for the harvest. Pray for the workers, because Jesus said, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. And ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest field. So, as the musicians come to play, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. So come and pray. And if you can sponsor a child today. If you need to pray about it first, good. If you've already prayed about it, just go. There's a table in the back, and I'll be there. to answer questions, to help you sort it out. Let us sing. Let us pray. Let us go.